teenagers. They are not easy, and they really can suck sometimes. Maybe not all and not always, but there are times. What else can I say? The things they will do to get what they want often have no boundaries. Oftentimes they are selfish and self-serving, thinking that the end justifies the means. They don't really care what happens to anyone else as long as they get what they want. Now, obviously not always, but everybody has a story of a teenager doing something completely out of character to get their way. We would like to believe that somehow their conscience will kick in and they will realize the ramifications of their actions. But guess what? Oftentimes they don't care. They don't think that far ahead. Their only concern is what they want and when they want it. They might feel bad later, look back, reflect when they get a little older and realize what they have done was wrong. While most parents try to instill in their children a sense of right and wrong, sometimes that just doesn't happen, no matter how hard they try. So what happens when a teenager makes a choice, then decides they want another option? What if they are bound to a decision unless there are extreme circumstances? Would a teenager create a situation of extreme circumstances to get their way? So what happens when a spur-of-the-moment decision has long-term and life-altering consequences? This is the story of Marie Robards. I'm Amy, and this is The Crime Queen. In 1974, high school sweethearts Beth Lomer and Stephen Robards got married. Stephen had just joined the Navy and he had signed up for 4 years. The pair wanted to be together when he was moved from base to base. Stephen's military service would take the young couple from San Diego to Florida. 2 years into their marriage, they had a daughter they named Dorothy Marie Robards. They eventually made their way back to their hometown of Fort Worth, Texas. The marriage had been rocky from the start. Stephen battled with depression shortly after the pair married, and just 4 years into that marriage, they separated. Beth took their daughter Marie with her. In 1981, Beth remarried. Frank Burroughs had met Beth and Steve when he was in the Navy with Steve. They had been stationed together in Florida. Beth said that they had just been friends while they were in Florida, but when they both found themselves recently divorced with a small child each, their relationship turned into more. Frank Burroughs had a young son and felt that the addition of Beth and little Marie completed their family. Marie was 4 when the couple got married, and Frank quickly became dad to the little girl, even though she still saw her biological father. She called her biological father Steve Dad and went to stay with him in Fort Worth a couple times per month. As Marie grew up, people noticed she and her mother had a very, very close bond. Steve wasn't concerned when Marie started to have issues with her stepdad. She was always close to her mother, and she started to show some possessiveness and jealousy toward her stepfather and her mother's relationship. Beth and Marie seem to interact more like best friends than mother and daughter. When Marie started high school, she was a good student and she was well liked by everyone. She was known as a good girl who stayed out of trouble. She played the clarinet and was also active in art and dance. In 1992, just before her 16th birthday, Marie came home and found her stepfather with another woman. He had been having an affair. Marie was angry and devastated. She suddenly lost respect for the man that she had called dad for most of her life. She felt it was an insurmountable betrayal to her mother. And as soon as she discovered this, she went to her mother and told her. The mother and daughter talked about their feelings and how this would affect their future. Marie fully expected her mother to leave Frank after learning of his infidelity, but Beth didn't want to leave him. Her mother told her she was upset by his actions, but they were going to stay together and work things out. Marie was angry and disappointed. She found her stepfather intolerable from that point on. She had always been a good kid, but this changed her. Anything Frank asked of her, she just simply wouldn't do. If he told her to clean her room, she said no. She talked back to him, and that was something she'd never done before. She just simply couldn't stand being around him. She started to withdraw from the entire family. This culminated in Marie approaching Beth one night. She told her, "I can't stand being in this house. I think you should divorce him." Beth told her daughter she didn't want to leave her husband and that she loved him and she knew he was capable of change. This was not what Marie wanted to hear. And she responded, "Well, I have to leave." So Beth made arrangements with her parents for Marie to go and stay with them. She enrolled in a new high school. She called her mom every night. And less than a week after her arrival, she took all of her money to pay for a cab ride back to her parents' house. Marie desperately missed her mother and just couldn't stand being away from her. Now, when Beth and Frank got married, Frank was worried about blending the family. He knew that it was common for kids to pit one parent against the other to get their way. He had made it known that one of the non-negotiable rules was that if one of the kids ever chose to move out and live with the other parent, they couldn't come back. Frank's own son had gone through a rebellious stage and moved in with his mother. Frank would not let him return. So it came as no surprise that when Marie took that cab and showed up less than a week after leaving, Frank told her she couldn't move back in, not even allowing her to come inside the home to discuss it. This resulted in a scene that played out in the front yard. There was screaming, crying, and fighting. Frank shouted that the rule applied to his son, and now it would apply to Beth's daughter. Beth really thought Frank would eventually change his mind and let the teenager move back in. But until then, she called Marie's father, Stephen, and asked him if he would take their daughter in. Steve said yes. He was excited to finally have his daughter living with him full time. He only had a one-bedroom apartment, but he requested a two-bedroom as soon as it became available. He had spent the last several years really working on improving himself and tackling his problems. He had been taking medications for his depression, and he felt he was cured. He had a new relationship with a woman named Sandra Hudgens, a single mother he had met at a support group for single parents. He was active in his church. He had a good job as a mail carrier, and he really felt like his daughter coming to live with him was the finishing touch to everything falling in place for him. For as excited as Stephen was, Marie was equally unhappy. She didn't like her new school. It was larger than the one she had been at before, and she didn't feel like she fit in. She hated her dad's cramped apartment, and she hated sleeping on the hide-a bed while waiting for a bigger apartment. She said he didn't keep the apartment as clean as she would like it, and he didn't have very many cooking utensils. Marie would call her mother every night and complain how unhappy she was living with her dad. For his part, Steve was giving it his all. He would take Marie out to eat to try and make her happy. He would take her to the movies. He was just trying his hardest. But she just wasn't happy. She felt that her mother had abandoned her for a stepfather who had cheated on her and really wasn't worthy of her mom's love. She continued to call her mother nonstop, begging to come back home. At one point, she even threatened suicide. Her mother really thought she was just being overly dramatic and chalked it up to being a teenager. It took a few months, but things started to look like they were improving. Marie started doing better in school and seemed to be making friends. Her relationship with her father also seemed to be going really well. She was cooperative and never talked back to her dad. Her mom noticed Marie seemed to have settled into her new living arrangement. She seemed to be the ideal teenager. On February 18th, Stephen and Marie had a dinner of takeout tacos before Stephen went to his regular Wednesday night church service. He returned less than an hour later, complaining of stomach pains. When he started to vomit, Marie went to get his girlfriend, Sandra, who lived in the same apartment complex. Marie sat with Sandra's young son at Sandra's apartment while his mother tended to Stephen. When Sandra arrived at Stephen's apartment, she found him in bed. He was complaining that his arms and legs were getting stiff and he couldn't swallow. When she saw foam and saliva coming from his mouth, she called an ambulance. She could hear him gurgling as she was on the phone. Once paramedics arrived, they tried to get an oxygen tube down his throat, but his airway was completely closed. They couldn't get the tube in to get him the oxygen he needed. This was when Marie came back to the apartment. She seemed to be in shock as she watched paramedics failing to save her father. Sandra grabbed Marie and hugged her face into her shoulder. She didn't want Marie to see her father die. Steve was transported to the hospital, but he passed away. Later that night, Frank and Beth came to the hospital to pick Marie up and take her back home with them. After her father's funeral, Beth took Marie aside. She told her that she and Frank were still having problems and that she had found a new job in Florida and she was going to take Marie and they were going to move to Florida, just the two of them. Marie asked, "You had this plan to take me all along to Florida?" Beth said Marie looked like she couldn't breathe. By the end of March, Beth and Marie had moved to Panama City, Florida. Marie seemed to be depressed. Some days she wouldn't even get out of her bed. Her mom feared that the depression her father battled was now creeping up on her daughter. She took Marie to see a counselor. Marie went to all of her appointments, but it just didn't seem to help. 3 months after they moved to Florida, Frank Burroughs showed up at their front door. He wanted to work things out with Beth. He promised he would work harder on their marriage, and at that point, even Marie was ready to accept him back into her life. However, within weeks of Frank coming to Florida to live with Beth and Marie, they would find out he just wasn't being honest. Marie found a note written by the woman he had been having an affair with in his pillowcase. At this point, Marie was done. She told her mother, "You can put up with him if you want to, but I don't have to. I miss Texas and I'm going home." Beth stayed in Florida with Frank, and Marie called her father's parents to take her in. They readily agreed, and Marie moved to Austin. She was a welcome addition to their household, and they had no complaints about their teenage granddaughter. The only thing that stood out as odd was her unwillingness to visit her father's grave. They enrolled her in Mansfield High School. As a new student, her classmates wanted to get to know her. She was striking and tall and caught everyone's attention. She was a kind of mystery to the other students, not really ever opening up about her past. Some of the students would compare notes on what they had heard about the new girl. Some students had heard that her dad had died. Some students said, no, he's still alive. People just didn't seem to really know what was going on. Even with the whispers about her past, Marie started to flourish. She was a straight-A student. All of her teachers thought highly of her. She was on the yearbook staff. She joined everything she could, including drama and journalism and volleyball. It was here that she met her best friend, Stacy High. Stacy was popular and bubbly. She was even voted the most humorous in her senior class. Stacy had suffered some serious abuse in her past, and she spent a lot of time talking to counselors and psychologists. Knowing so many of the signs, she often wondered if her friend's seemingly perfect outward appearance and guarded personality was hiding something painful. She didn't press her for info, but she made herself available to be the best friend she could be. The two were inseparable. They were writing partners on the yearbook staff and were also together after school. The pair even had fake IDs and would go to country bars in the city. It was while they were driving around in Marie's car that Stacy tried to get her to open up about her dad. Stacy's own father lived in another state, and she very rarely saw him. But even after revealing her own pain, it didn't seem to inspire any more sharing from Marie. One night, the pair were studying Hamlet when Stacy read to Marie her favorite part of the play. The character Claudius had poisoned his brother to gain the throne. Oh, spoiler alert. Stacy read to Marie his speech, asking if he can ever repent. Quote, "My fault is my past, but oh, what form of prayer can serve my turn? Forgive me my foul murder. That cannot be, since I am still possessed of those effects for which I did the murder." Stacy then asked Marie, "Isn't that cool?" She looked over at her friend, who had gone silent. Marie's hands were shaking. Her face had gone pale. Marie then asked Stacy, "Do you think people can go through life without a conscience?" Stacy replied, in reference to the play, "Well, how about the kind of person who can look somebody in the eye and kill them in cold blood?" Stacy said at that point, Marie stood, backed up against the wall, collapsed, and began to weep. Stacy did not know what was wrong with her friend. The sudden change in her didn't make any sense. Stacy rushed to her side and she asked what was wrong. Marie just said, "Guess." So Stacy, thinking about the worst thing she could imagine at 17, she said, "Oh my God, are you pregnant?" Marie whispered, "No." "Did you wreck your grandparents' car?" Stacy was still trying to guess. Marie shook her head, "No." Then, jokingly, Stacy said, "Well, you didn't kill somebody, did you?" At that point, Marie started sobbing. And then she said, "My father, I poisoned him." Stacy didn't know what to say. She knew it had been a year since Marie's father had died. She could not have imagined that this was Marie's secret. How could she have kept the secret an entire year? She just couldn't believe Marie had done this. Not the smart, pretty, popular friend that she was so close to. Stacy knew she needed more information. So, with her heart pounding and fearful of what she was going to be told, she asked Marie, "What happened?" Marie told Stacy she had moved in with her father, and after finding out about her stepfather's infidelity to her mother, she loved her mother and couldn't tolerate how he had betrayed her. So she told her mom she couldn't live with her stepdad. Although angry with her stepfather, she soon realized she desperately wanted to be back with her mother. They were so close, and she said she felt like a part of her was missing by not having her mother there under the same roof. When they wouldn't let her come back home, she knew there would have to be a bigger reason. Then one day in class, she had an idea. Marie told Stacy she had taken barium acetate from her chemistry class at school. One night, she took a spoonful and put it in her father's refried beans on his taco. Stacy asked her why she did this, and Marie said because she wanted to go back and live with her mom. Stacy kept Marie's secret for a while, but she couldn't overcome the gnawing feeling that maybe she didn't know her friend as well as she thought she did. It wasn't long before the stress started to eat at her. Stacy started to have nightmares where Marie was chasing her. She would have nightmares of Stephen calling to her from his grave. She started drinking and partying to excess. She finally went to her mother and told her mom everything. Stacy's mom was concerned, but she believed that Marie had made up the story because she wasn't able to handle her father's death. The stress on Stacy was building, and she didn't feel like she had anywhere to turn. Stacy wound up having a mental breakdown. She checked herself into an outpatient mental facility. She knew she couldn't go on this way. She knew she had to tell what she knew to someone who could investigate and find out if what Marie had confessed to her was true. A distraught Stacy went to the police. Investigators listened to what she had to say. Stephen's death had been ruled a heart attack by the coroner, but they hadn't checked for barium acetate. That substance is not typically screened for in an autopsy, unless there's a reason. Police had a hard time believing this teenager, this good student who never had any problems, would commit a crime like this. But they had to investigate. In 1994, the Tarrant County Medical Examiner's Office did not have the specialized machine in their possession. It had a $150,000 price tag and was not easily found. They started searching nationwide for a lab that had this equipment. Now, the coroner's office keeps all samples of autopsies, so that was one thing they did have in their favor. It took 4 months to find a lab that had this equipment, and it was located in Pennsylvania. It would take several more months before the results would come back. While waiting on the lab results, Fort Worth Police Department continued their investigation. They went to the high school and the chemistry class Marie had attended. They found that the class did have barium acetate in the room. They also found a safety manual listing all the chemicals in the class with their safety precautions, toxicity amounts, and what to do in case of accidental ingestion. The page for barium acetate was missing. After going to police, Stacy was able to settle back into her life. If there was any truth to what her friend had told her, law enforcement would find it and proceed accordingly. The girls finished their senior year of high school. After graduation, Stacy went to Sam Houston State University, while Marie went to the University of Texas at Austin. Marie was studying to become a medical pathologist. She paid part of her tuition with the $60,000 life insurance she collected from her father's death. When the lab results arrived, police were surprised. Stephen had 28 times the lethal amount of barium acetate in his system. This overturned the original natural cause of death in his case. Police went to Austin, where they arrested Marie. They took her to the police department, where she quickly confessed to what she had done. Police were baffled. "Did your father abuse you in any way?" they asked. She said no, he hadn't. Then they asked her why. Why would she go to these extremes and kill her father? She said simply, I wanted to go and live with my mom again. Released on bond, Marie used more of the life insurance money to retain two defense attorneys. They claimed that Marie had only wanted to make her father sick, not knowing that the chemical and the dose she gave him would be fatal. It was a weak defense from the start. Marie was an excellent student in her chemistry class, and she knew quite well how lethal barium acetate was. She had taken the page out of the safety manual to ensure her own safety while poisoning her father. That made the claim she only wanted to make him sick hard to swallow. But the hardest part, the part that couldn't be explained away, was why she had stood silently and watched paramedics try to save her father and said nothing about what she knew he had ingested. On May 9, 1996, after only an hour of deliberations, the jury returned with a verdict of guilty of murder in the first degree. At Marie's sentencing, she cried and said she was sorry for what she had done. She was sentenced to 27 years. In 2003, after serving only 7 years of her sentence, Marie Robards was granted parole. She has since gotten married and taken her husband's name. She is suspected to still live in the Fort Worth area, and she lives in anonymity. The people she is around every day more than likely have no idea of what she did. In a truly unusual twist, her family has continued to support her, even her paternal grandparents. They all agree she is a good girl who made a mistake. A mistake is defined as an action or judgment that is misguided or wrong. While everyone has different ideas on how they see things, I have a hard time calling this a mistake. One of the things I always say is if somebody hides something that they've done, it's because they know it was wrong. If they didn't think what they did was wrong, they wouldn't conceal it. We've all made mistakes. Very rarely does a true mistake result in loss of life. But for her to intentionally put poison into a person's food, poison you know is toxic, I just feel that goes beyond a mistake. Teenagers can be difficult. They are selfish and focused on their wants, rarely thinking about anyone else. Teenagers often do things that hurt others, and they don't really think about anything that they've done. Oftentimes they don't care as long as they get their way. As adults, it's our responsibility to make sure we guide them as best we can. We also need to question when something doesn't quite add up. My hope is that the family of Stephen Robards has been able to process the loss of Stephen and the loss of who they thought Marie was. I hope that she got help while she was in prison and fully understands the pain her actions caused to so many innocent people who loved her and just wanted to support her. My wish for Marie is that she recognizes how wrong what she did was and uses that to help others in some capacity. At the very least, she owes it to her father and his memory. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Crime Queen. Please like, follow, share, subscribe, rate, review, all of the things. If you have a story you would like me to cover or a story you would like to share, please email me at thecrimequeen@gmail.com. Until next time, Crime Kingdom, wear your crown, carry a sword. Thank you.